Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
We're ignoring this nonsense from my producer. Hello and welcome to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and of course Nick Gillard, James Howard and DR Kernaz of Back of the Nest. And talking of gifts, gentlemen, you've been asking, you've been praying for goals at Selhurst Park all season, and they're like London buses, five of them for you at the weekend.
Exactly, I couldn't believe it. I was just shocked, the fact that this was a home Premier League game
at Selhurst, and we scored five goals. It's like,
what? They were good goals as well, weren't they?
Exactly. I was like, we waited 38 games to have a big performance like that, and then it came. I was happy with it. I said it before we left last week. I said, you know what? I just want to see goals. I don't care if we lose 5-4. I just want us to end
with entertainment, like, yeah, wasn't it? And you predicted 0-0. What happened there?
Exactly. I don't know. I thought it might be a typical Palace like home game and it'd be like 0-0 because everyone was really expecting goals as we're not playing for anything, so I thought it might go against us.
Well, it wasn't a typical Palace home game in more than just the scoreline, because of course it was confirmed after the show that this was the last Palace game full stop for a real club legend, Julian Speroni. He's been at the club forever. He's a glorious servant, a glorious goalkeeper, now virtually geriatric, finally calling it a day. Lots of fans were calling for him to start, but Roy Hodgson wasn't having any of that sentimentality.
No, apparently Julian actually approached Roy and said, look, I don't think it's right that I should play. That's what I was told. And fair play to him. That's the sort of guy that Julian is. A very, very nice, approachable person. I've met him quite a few times in the corporate hospitality suite. He's been at the club so long. Name dropping there. But he's such a nice guy. And he doesn't want everything to evolve around him. And as I said last week, you know, it would have been, I think it's too much for him to come in and play the last game. And if something happened that we didn't really, you know, he sort of dropped a clanger, as I said, it wouldn't be. I think he could have been on the bench and I think he could have come on for 5 or 10 minutes. Yeah.
Because he featured earlier this season and he did drop a clanger.
Yeah, but then he featured again at home and he made some vital saves against Tottenham in the FA Cup. So he's had a good performance and a bad performance. I know that Jules said that, but I was just a bit surprised that he wasn't at least on the bench.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
Jules is that type of person where he wouldn't want to start. He's not going to go to the manager and say, you know what, this is my final game, can I please start? He will say the opposite, which he did do. But it's really up to the manager from then on. I don't know. I would have preferred him to be at least on the bench and maybe come on for the last 5 minutes if he wasn't going to start, which was the case. But that didn't happen and Wayne Hennessy was there. But
being that I thought Gaita was a bit sloppy on two of the goals, it might have been 5-1.
I didn't really look at Gaita like that.
I thought we could have got down quicker for the first two. But that game had two of my favourite moments of the season, all in one game, which was...
It was an exciting game.
I can guess
exciting
one of
game. Well, I'll go back to it, but back to Jules. I was looking at a photo of him somebody put on Twitter from Match Magazine from 15 years ago when he first started. Man, that kit was huge. He looked like a kid on the first day of term with his uniform that he's going to grow into. So you got to remember the timeout he had when Gabor Kiraly stepped in, and he waited. He didn't go to another team. He didn't drop down a couple of divisions. He just bided his time, put the work into his game, and then the position was his again. He was signing autographs during the second half down near the tunnel, and it was hard whether to watch the game or watch him, because, you know, he timed one and, you know, everybody came down then for him. But he was very patient with them, and just seeing the genuine joy in people's faces when they got a selfie with him.
We're hearing rumours, by the way, that Wayne Hennessy didn't know who Julian Speroni was or whether it was his final game, so we can't blame him for the situation.
He deserves... going back to Jules quick, if one player deserves a statue right now, I think it's Jules outside Selhurst Park. I really do. I just He's a clock. You're looking. Your face is a bit. But honestly, for what he's done for Palace, I know he isn't a world class goalkeeper, but on and off the pitch, you have to realise that he's done a lot off the pitch as well. And he's just missed the Crystal Palace. Like, when players used to come in, I think Jules has said it as well. He's the first one to greet them and put them in a club. And you saw it by the reactions after the game as well. These players, there's some players that haven't played with Jules on the same pitch, but it seems like they're. He's like a father figure to them, and it shows that. And you know, 15 years now.
Yeah,
he deserves a statue in my eyes.
Better than Michael Jackson, eh, Fulham?
I'm a little bit sort of wondering why he's sort of that's it really. I'm thinking, you know, was there not an opportunity for him to carry on as a coach or still player coach as a third keeper? I don't know. Maybe he wants to go and play elsewhere. Yeah, we don't know.
Apparently, he said that he's going to go elsewhere and play and.
Yeah.
Sometimes players don't even want to be coaches. I know we always assume, like, when a legend retires, oh, right, he should be a coach at the club. Sometimes they don't like it. But with Jules, I think he wants to go and play. And maybe after his playing days are over, I can see him coming back to the club.
Yeah, me and James were little, back all them years ago, they used to either become a cabbie or get a pub, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. A few players have done that.
Which do you think Spironi would be more likely to do?
Well, he's already opened a restaurant, hasn't he, in Purley? So I don't know if you know you're aware of that.
No, I don't know if that's still going.
Did it go a little bit?
It was an Argentine restaurant, wasn't it?
Oh, I never got the opportunity to go there. I really wanted to as well.
That might be why.
Yeah.
I hope it wasn't health and safety or something.
But he's got the restaurant at the ground named after him.
Yeah,
Spironi's, which is it's all right, isn't it, in there?
Yeah, it's nice in there. Nice meal. Yeah, have you been there?
I went there once.
Oh, so you have frequented the place?
Once.
Then?
No, he's talking about the club.
The
corporate hospitality, which he frowned upon on me just earlier before going.
I can't believe the leg room. I'm not going to do the marathon march this year. My legs are absolutely kaput at the knees. Half of it is walking because I haven't got a car at the moment. So 57 miles I did the other week in 1 week. That's just work. And the seats are so close together in that main stand. And the gentleman in front of me wasn't the child that's usually there. And he wouldn't stop rocking backwards and forwards. And every time, the sharp bit of the chair in my kneecap.
Good old Sellers Park.
Yeah, but what about the atmosphere, though? Just we got to say something about the atmosphere on the weekend. It was brilliant, wasn't it? I mean, it was back to the old days, wasn't it? All the stands were cheering and up on this, you know, their feet. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, it was a perfect ending, really, to the season. Last home game was the Everton one. Was it Everton? Yeah, Everton. The atmosphere was a bit dull at times, but I feel like the atmosphere on a weekend, it was just fantastic. You couldn't really ask for more from the fans.
Do you think the... Because the Bournemouth fans added to it as well with all their inflatables. We haven't seen inflatables at Selhurst since we played Man City in the old second division before the Premier League when they were on their way down to the third. Sorry, Man City, you got to remember where you were once. but that was good. And I thought the match was played, I don't know, it was like we had the shackles off. And I'm sure as the show goes on, we'll talk about it. But we just seemed more open and flowing and... without having any end of season nerves that, you know, we could get relegated, it just made the game so much better.
Well, coming up, is what we saw at the weekend a taste of the kind of football Palace could play if Roy Hodgson took a few more risks? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
We've been calling for quite some time for Roy Hodgson to take a few more risks as Palace manager. I know that you, DR Kurnaz of Back of the Nest, feel that Palace could perhaps have a bit more joy if they were a bit more forward thinking and took a few more risks. Of course, 5 goals scored, 3 conceded at the weekend against Bournemouth is the definition of forward thinking, the definition of risk taking. Would you like to see the team play like that from the get-go next season?
Yes, in a way. And this is because it was a final game of the season. We have to consider that as well. Bournemouth and Palace both, it seemed like defence wasn't a thing. And I feel like if we play like that next season, we're not going to score 5 goals every game. But you saw how dangerous we were going forward. And it's just simply, if teams are going to sit back, then we can do that if we have the same formation out there and the same players out there. And I feel like that's the best way to approach it. Because this season, you look at our away form, and we're Europa League club. We finished sixth, I think, in away form table. And then you look at our home form, we're 18th. So it's not rocket science. Our home form, and you can see it by the way that we play at home, it's just not up to standards. But against Bournemouth, there were signs of optimism, and hopefully Roy carries that on for next season.
Yeah, I think we did create quite a few chances early in the season, but you know, we've now got that natural goal scorer. Well, we have. Well, we had up until the weekend. But it's proven that you know, having a natural goal scorer is a big difference.
It's all right because Sorloth's coming back.
Oh,
ah. Okay.
Sorloth. No, yeah, exactly. Sorloth.
You're just messing with your mind. Sorloth. I don't know what's going on with him.
I mean, yeah, apparently he's... there was some video of him catching something from the stands. That's probably the best highlight he's had
over the weekend. He's scored a few goals in that. Is it Jupiter League?
Jupiler.
Okay.
Yeah. Scored a few goals. But apparently they're interested in buying him on... Yeah, buying him this summer. Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
For more than 9 million.
I doubt it.
Would you be happy to see Sorloth go? Because he looked completely anemic in a Palace shirt, but we haven't seen very much of him in a Palace shirt.
I've seen enough of him, to be honest with you, to realise that he's not up to the grade, unfortunately. I think there's some really, really tough decisions that have got to be made now at the end of this season. And Roy has got to sit down with the owners and say, look, you know, what are we going to do about these players? Because we've given them long enough, we've tried them, and they're just not performing. And we've either got to go out there and spend money on the likes of Batshuayi, and we might have to lose a lot of money as well by ripping up contracts such as Benteke's.
Mm. But a thing I want to touch on, Jason Puncheon, he was another player that left on a weekend. And just looking at the bigger picture, Jason Puncheon and Julian Speroni, both of them, you could offer them a contract, maybe on low wages. But the fact that the club is moving on from them, I think it sends a big message out there that the club is thinking more financially rather than just looking at, oh, it's Jason Puncheon, oh, it's Julian Speroni there. You know, they've contributed massively. And I think that's a good thing for the club, as we've got so many players that just don't influence the team in any way, and there's no point of them staying.
I was interested, James, by your suggestion there that the club could rip up the contract of the likes of Christian Benteke. Do you think we could actually see that happen? Because from a business perspective, you'd have thought the likes of Steve Parrish would at least be looking to recoup a few million, upwards of 10 on Benteke.
Well, I've had a long, hard think about this. You know, he's on a lot of wages. And personally, I don't think anyone's going to come in and buy him on those wages that he's on. The only club that I think may purchase him if they go up is Aston Villa, based on what happened at Villa. You know, what he
come on, you
Villa.
Baggies. I want him to win tonight.
So you know, what the situation is, do we go another season having him as a squad player? Or do we just say, look, it's not working out. We take whatever we get for him or rip up the contract because he's using up the place of another striker. I think that that's something that the club are going to have to obviously seriously think very, very hard about.
I think he makes a difference when he's been coming on, though. You've got to remember how injured he's been. He's been crocked all the time. I mean, Wickham made an appearance. I mean, what's going to happen with him?
The difference between him and Wickham, right? I'll tell you this completely. Absolutely, Benteke is an extremely strong, powerful player in the box, especially when the ball's coming in at a height from wide. But Wickham, Connor Wickham, is still got age on his side. He can hold the ball up. He traps the ball. He passes it. He retains possession. I have seen enough of Benteke that if he's not scoring, he's actually a disadvantage to the team because he just gives the ball away every time.
But then Connor Wickham, he doesn't play as much. So, like, all right, Connor Wickham can get the odd goal or two, but he hardly plays due to his injury. So, I see him on the same boat as Benteke.
I'm not saying that Connor Wickham should stay. I'm not arguing that one. I'm just saying my reasons for where we have to seriously consider ripping up the contract. But I absolutely agree with you. There has to be a point of where we say, well, but then again, Connor Wickham will be on a lot of wages and he's still under contract. Is anyone else going to come in and take a punt on him, on a player that's been injured for more than two seasons?
I don't know whether, if we're going to lose Benteke, the only option I can think of is China, where maybe he'll get his wages matched. But if we lose Benteke, we need to have got somebody in first, because I don't want to be in the situation where we were at the start of the season with hardly any fit, recognisable strikers.
And I think that's a good point, because I know that Benteke is on high wages, but then again, I don't want to lose Benteke for too cheaply. Like some people suggested, 5 million. I feel like that's just too low for Benteke. And he's still got that name, Benteke, and as bad as it's been, I feel like we could at least sell him for 10 to 15 million if someone come for him.
Anything under than 15 million quid for the amount that you spent on him pedigree as a Premier League striker. For me, I'm not a Palace fan. You guys know better than I do, but looking in from the outside, insanity.
Yeah, I agree. Because if we have an injury crisis, he's still showing glimpses of hope. And you've mentioned, Nick, that he's had injuries. I'll still keep him at the club. He's got one more year. I'd rather he goes on a free than we sell him for 5 million and we don't have we were missing a striker for the rest of the season.
Or just say, look, you've got till January to sort yourself out, Mr. Christian. And if not, you can go.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that if he stays, okay, I would like, if he stays, fair enough, but I don't want him playing every week. Not the way he's been playing this season, to be honest with you, because even if he's not scoring, it's like on Sunday, you know, we played so well. We knocked the ball around. We didn't give the ball away. We scored goals. And when Benteke was playing, we weren't, because he is the weakest link and he is giving the ball away too much.
But then when Benteke was playing, we wasn't playing that type of football as we were on Sunday as well.
He can't play that type of football.
Well, the biggest question about Benteke, and I take your point absolutely, James, is whether he's happy to play a bit part role off the bench. Because the situation in which he is obviously useful is, as you say, James, because he can't play that kind of football. You have him on the bench as option two and route one. If it's not working, you go back to Allardyce ball. That's a good option. But would he be happy to sit on the bench until the 70th minute every game and then come on at that point?
Well, if you're going to have Benteke, you need Wilf and Townoe on the wings, getting the balls in for him to head them in. If you cross, he will score eventually.
I think if you've got two up front, and as you say, you've got some two very, very good wide players, fair enough. But you know, it's not going to be, we're not going to be able to play like that every week, not against the top six, maybe the top 10. You know, if we can't get rid of him, we keep him as a squad player. Fair enough. Comes off the bench. Is he going to be happy with doing that? Well, if I was paid the wages he's paid, I'd be happy just coming off the bench.
Well, what about wage cut? Would he be happy with that? Let's say we sign him on for another 2-3 years and he agreed to a wage cut.
No, I wouldn't extend it at all.
I don't see why he'd agree to that either, because I doubt he has any real love for the club. I'm not saying that he's particularly a mercenary, but I don't see why any Premier League footballer with the option of going to China and getting bigger money would go, yeah, I'll take 20 grand a week less.
But is he still in line for being picked for the Belgian squad? And would going to China actually hinder him getting in and playing alongside?
Well, ordinarily, you would say so. We've seen certainly Seedorf, who's been manager of the Cameroonian national team, say that anyone who plays in China isn't getting in my squads, full stop. But taking the Belgian example, certainly when Roberto Martinez was in charge, Yannick Ferreira Carrasco went from Atletico Madrid to a Chinese team and still started for Belgium in the World Cup. So the Belgian FA don't seem to have any particular issues with that.
You know your onions, don't you?
Well, I do. I do about the Belgian FA. Talking of the Belgian FA, one Belgian striker misfiring, one very much on the money. Michy Batshuayi looked lethal at the weekend, and coming up, will he still be looking lethal at Selhurst Park next?
This is Love Sport.
Next season. Michy Batshuayi got two goals at the weekend. And talking of high-scoring performers, Johnny Bairstow has just got his 700 in 62 ODIs for England. England 194 for one, chasing a target of 359. Looking very, very comfortable. And Bairstow has been a big part of that. Batshuayi looked comfortable at the weekend, supported by a superb Wilfried Zaha. It's everything you want as a centre-forward. We haven't been sure about him on this show. Still, of course, only on loan from Chelsea. He's had moments of excellence, moments where he's failed to convince. But the first goal for him at the weekend, a glorious instinctive striker's finish. The second, clinical on the end of an excellent piece of work from Wilfried Zaha. Does he have to stay?
it'd be lovely if he could. I mean, that first goal in real time, that was something else, wasn't it? You couldn't wait to see the replay on the Jumbotron after that one. It was just...
The Jumbotron.
That's what they're called. Technical
term. That's what they're called, isn't it? The big tellies?
Big tellies now. It's just
what is
LED
it?
Screen.
LED screen?
Yeah.
We're sticking with the Jumbotron. From now on, I don't care if it's right. That sounds excellent. Anyway.
I thought I was right. It's always been a Jumbotron, hasn't it? Come on, you're my age.
I don't know. Oh, it looks like a mini Jumbotron.
A mini Jumbotron. Do you remember the old scoreboard that was like an 8-bit? And every time a player got booked, you had this really bad animation of a referee wagging his finger and a teardrop coming from an 8-bit player's eye.
Vaguely.
The only scoreboard that could accommodate Burnley's badge. Where were we?
Back to why? Yeah, it was a fantastic finish.
Even from the start, I felt he showed that he was a natural goal scorer. Mm. Right? I've never been particularly disappointed him. Maybe the times that he hasn't performed are because of the system and the way that Roy set us up. Maybe, you know, we've had to play him up front isolated, and he's not that type of player. But quite clearly, if you stick the ball in front of him, whether it's in the penalty box or just outside, he will score goals for you. And that's...
Who was it he scored against where he redirected the ball, but it looked like he meant it? Was it his first goal?
Leicester, away.
Might have been.
It was a deflection, wasn't it?
He knew what he was doing.
Oh, okay. I'm not too sure. But he's a natural goal scorer.
Yeah.
I know that for sure. And the thing about him and Benteke, I remember this Benteke conversation all started from, would you rather, if we were living in an ideal world, would you rather sell Benteke and bring him back Shawai or keep Benteke? And I would, if we had the opportunity to do that, then I would have done that. I would do that if I was Palace. Batshuayi is a natural goal scorer, and as you said, our strikers have been isolated at times because of the way that we play. And when you give him the opportunity, he scores, and he's a natural goal scorer, which is what we need.
So are we agreed that given the choice, in an ideal world, you'd keep Batshuayi on a permanent basis next season?
Oh, definitely, yes. Yeah.
100%.
We don't have a goal scorer, and he's our only goal scorer.
And who else is out there that's going to be available that we know can do it?
Yeah, and who you know fits in with the team as well. The big question then is, are Chelsea going to let him go? He cost them a pretty penny when he turned up. Hasn't quite worked for him there, but of course Chelsea are currently operating under the shadow of a potential transfer ban. It could kick in this summer. It's being appealed. That appeal has been taken to the Court for Arbitration of Sport. If they follow the kind of protocol they followed when Spanish clubs have had similar bans in the past, the ban will probably kick in from January. But if Chelsea are worried about not being able to sign players this summer, you talk, DR, rightly about Palace not having a goal scorer. Chelsea feel the same way. Mm. Giroud's inconsistent. Higuain, they absolutely despise. So is there a worry from a Palace perspective that Maurizio Sarri, or even higher up that particular Chelsea pecking order, might be looking at Batshuayi and saying, hang on a minute, you could do a job at the Bridge?
100%. And that's why I'm not confident in signing Batshuayi, but I would love it if it did happen. But yeah, as you said, the transfer ban, I think it could go against us, and I don't see it happening.
You know, there's a couple of players for Chelsea have got that I'd love to take, and that's obviously Batshuayi and I think Tammy Abraham, who's out on loan. Those two players would be, I mean, if we could retain Batshuayi, make him permanent, and then we could also maybe get Tammy Abraham.
I would
love that.
I doubt that would happen, though.
It's doubtful. But
I think even if we get Batshuayi on loan, I'll still be happy with that. Just another season on loan. Yeah. And just see what happens from then on. And we'll see. Because Batshuayi, we haven't really seen him. You know, every player goes out of form for a certain period of time, and we haven't seen our Batshuayi, so we don't know how he reacts when he isn't playing well, because since he's joined Palace, he's been pretty well in scoring goals. So if we get him on loan for another season, I guess that would be the best thing for both parties, as we'll see Batshuayi through his ups and lows and see how he performs throughout the season.
Just having a look, Chelsea, on loan strikers, Christian Pulisic.
They've got like 300,
Pulisic,
haven't they?
Pulisic, he is coming in on a permanent basis. Not quite a striker. He'll play on the right wing for Chelsea next year.
Izzy Brown, who's at Leeds United.
He's not good enough.
Tammy Abraham, not good enough.
I think Tammy might be good enough. I think he might get a chance, but he won't lead the line for Chelsea.
I don't know why they got Victor Moses down here as a striker. This is on the Chelsea site as well. Oh, the fifth stand. it is. And Morata. Yeah, and Lucas Piazon, who's at Chievo at the moment.
I think we can rule almost all of them out. Morata, yeah, I think, is going to go to Atleti permanently. Piazon is ridiculously bad at football.
Batshuayi is the best option.
Yes.
It? So, yeah, that's what makes it harder for us, and the transfer ban even makes it worse.
But if that ban doesn't come in this summer, Chelsea then...
It's still hard.
And the flip is still hard, but Chelsea will go the other way. They will realise, because they'll have an answer, right? Mm. So they'll know that a ban is coming into place in January. Keep in mind, it applies for two windows, right? So they'll be banned for January, and they'll be banned for next summer. So what Chelsea will do, if I know Chelsea, and even though we're hearing that Abramovich is perhaps losing interest, they're going to overbuy. They're going to go mad because they know that they can't make any changes for the following two windows. So if they do stick with Sarri, they're going to buy a striker. They're going to buy a striker. They'll probably buy a central midfielder. They'll probably buy a left back because they'll have to get the business done. So in a funny way, if the ban doesn't come in immediately, that could do Palace a favour.
It might do, but then I think other clubs will be interested as well in Batshuayi. It won't be only us. So it really depends on whether Batshuayi was happy at Palace. I know he scored goals, but...
He seemed happy.
Yeah, he seemed happy. So I don't know. It just depends. I think that is an advantage that we could potentially... if that does happen, if they bring in more players.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with a player, it's got to be right for them as well. And he's got off to a really good start, you know, in his season with us. So to continue that into next season, does he really, if he gets the opportunity to sign for us at Palace, he'd probably go for it rather than maybe speculate and go for another mid-table team in the Premiership and think, well, am I going to fit in? Am I going to... work well with the system? And what we saw on Sunday was that, you know, he was thriving off Wilf and Max Meyer's passes and through balls. It was just fantastic. So he knows the service he's going to get, and he has demonstrated that it works for him. Yeah. And the team works from him.
On that point, how much do you think that Batshuayi's future is contingent upon the futures of other people? Because if you say to Michy Batshuayi, come and play for Crystal Palace, you'll have Wilfred Zaha setting you up, that's a lot more appealing than come and play for Crystal Palace, Wilf might be off, but I promise we'll get a replacement.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think a lot is also dependent on whether Chelsea win whenever the Europa League final is, because that will get them, it'll make them seem a lot better than they've appeared to have been in the league. So you might get more Chelsea players deciding to stick around.
Yeah, and they'll get into Champions League, won't they, if they win
that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be in a scenario where it's similar to Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Batshuayi stays at Palace and then he gets his opportunity Ruben Loftus-Cheek straight away didn't get the opportunity to perform at Chelsea, but he waited and he got his time and then he started performing and scoring goals. So it might be a similar situation with Batshuayi might look at Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I know it's different because Ruben Loftus-Cheek, he was younger, but he might look at it and say, you know what, I might as well stay at Chelsea. I could potentially play in the Champions League. I just have to wait for my opportunity. So that could be another factor to consider as well.
Ruben being English helps because they're talking about bringing sort of higher numbers for English.
Yeah, it's that homegrown element he needs to tick that particular box. If you were to get him, how much do you think Chelsea can charge? Because these January loan moves can go one of two ways for each club, right? Firstly, for Chelsea, it can be positive in the sense that if he goes and performs, as he has done, they can add another £10 million to that fee. And for Palace, it can be a concern as well, because as we've seen with Yuri Tielemans at Leicester, if you only get him on loan, and he's then brilliant, you get Europe's elite coming and trying to nick him. We're seeing that Andre Gomez, who's been on loan at Everton, could now go to Spurs. How worried are you that another team will come in for Batshuayi?
Yeah, it's a chance. That's why I mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, that even though Batshuayi has been performing well for us, another Europa League team or Champions League team might come for him and he could potentially go there. So I feel like that is another factor to consider.
We'll be bringing you updates, of course, on the situation throughout the summer. Hopefully, we will soon enough have a permanent signing of Michy Batshuayi to announce. And coming up, Andros Townsend, obviously, one goal of the season. Hang on. No, wait a minute. He didn't, because he didn't win the league. What's that about?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow and DR Kernaz, James Howard and Nick Gillard of the Back of the Nest podcast. And gents, we're going to begin with a question. Who should win Premier League goal of the season? Which was the best?
Andros Townsend.
Against City?
Yeah.
James Howard?
Absolutely. Andros Townsend.
Nick?
The guy for Bournemouth who got the own goal. Funniest thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the best things I've seen this season. It was just comedy gold, but no, Andros Townsend.
I was going to say.
What about you? Who do you think?
Andros Townsend.
All right.
As an unbiased broadcaster, Andros Townsend. It's a full-blooded volley from 30, 40 yards against Manchester City. It's an extraordinary goal. And I'm genuinely baffled that anyone could pick other goals. We've seen great strikes, of course. Jefferson Lermas wasn't bad at the weekend. But Vincent Kompany has won it for that screamer. And it was a screamer. It's a fantastic goal against Leicester City. Of course, a crucial goal in the penultimate day of the Premier League season. Arguably the most significant of all. But was it the best?
No. They picked it based on what was the most significant goal of the season, not the best goal of the season. Because they said Kompany, as if he didn't score that goal, they might have not won the league. Well, it's not about... The rules is that it's the best goal of the season and they changed the rules, basically.
If Townsend didn't score that goal, then City might have been way ahead anyway.
No, I'll admit it.
So it's just... Because it's happened at a different part of the season.
Company's
it's rubbish. No. They had a vote. You did it on the app. Vincent Kompany got 28% of the votes from viewers. And Townsend got 29%, if my memory serves me correct. So you can tweet in or phone in if I'm wrong. I'm quite often wrong. But he actually won the vote. And then it was put to Shearer and Bagkisser Wright, who went for the Kompany goal.
I know, and Gary Lineker as well. I feel like Wright, he was actually going for Townsend and then he kind of got pressured towards the end. And Lineker, they chose Kompany. But that's the thing I don't get. Nick, 100%, their goal was most significant. Like, I don't feel like Andros Townsend's goal against City was more significant than Kompany's goal. But then again, that's not the rules. We're voting on the best goal of the season.
Indeed.
And everyone, it's not only Palace fans, other fans from, you know, other clubs, they were confused as well. And I feel like it's just big club bias. That's
If it was bias in the fans and it was just more fans ringing in, I know Man City haven't really built up their supporter base from when they were in the old third division not long ago. But you'd think that they'd win it by a lot longer. Back of the Nest has in the past put itself forward to podcast awards. And it's always podcasts from the big teams that get through to it simply because they've got a bigger support.
Well, if we look at the FBAs this year, Arsenal Fan TV, both in terms of the TV channel and all of their podcasts, won a huge amount of things because of their social media oomph.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, we were in the finals 2 years ago under our old iteration. And that year, Liverpool won it, Chelsea won it, Man United won it. It was, pants, really. And again, we've seen that in Match of the Day.
So how come, you know, a year ago, was it the season before? Giroud got that goal with a scorpion kick. That was goal of the season.
That was against Palace.
That was Arsenal against Palace. I was at that game. And it was a fantastic goal. But the game didn't have any real meaning at all. It was a bog-standard home win for Arsenal against Palace. So, you know, based on that, the technique was fantastic. He got a goal, well-deserved goal of the season. I just think that the likes of Shearer and Wright are just so overwhelmed by the moment and their emotions just get the better of them.
Well, it's what we're dealing with.
And it's not professional.
It's not professional, but is what we're dealing with not just big club bias or perhaps not even big club bias at all and not significance of goal bias in and of itself, but rather a kind of memory bias in the sense that Kompany did that 2 weeks ago. It's fresh in the memory. Everyone's still excited about it. Whereas, you know, Andros Townsend, we were all screaming and shouting about it, but it was 6 months ago and we've all had a bit of time to calm down.
Yeah, they're like kids. I mean, it's, you know, they remember the things that good that happened last week. They don't remember the things that happened that were good 6 months ago or a year ago. It's so unprofessional. I just wish they'd have let the viewers vote for this because that's obvious that Townsend would have won it if the viewers had a chance to vote.
Well, personally, I'm not going to watch Match of the Day for the next 8 weeks.
I know. I have,
next, you're going to boycott it in the closed season.
Yeah.
It's very, very noble of you, Nick. I'd like to personally commend that particular sacrifice. I think we've all agreed that Andros, as the old cliche goes, was robbed.
Yep.
But there is positive news for Palace, potentially. Certainly things to look forward to. We've had a new home kit. It's been open to the fans. We can have a look at it. Now, I need you to select amongst yourselves the best wordsmith. And what you're going to do is you're going to paint a picture of this home kit, because not everyone listening is going to have seen it. So I want to know exactly what it looks like.
So it's like last season's kit, but there's a white. It's white instead of yellow.
It's got like very colours. Thin white stripe in between. I can't remember.
In the middle, in the left-hand side, on the right-hand
but
side.
Was it in the red stripes or the blue stripes? We've got blue shorts, which is unusual. A lot of fans prefer the red shorts.
It doesn't suit it.
By the end of the match, it looked like a toddler had been sucking the collar of it because it seemed to come loose. So I hope they weren't the real thing that they're going to be using, because
it stands out.
It stands out. I thought it looked like a Bayern Munich kit from behind. It looked like it could have been one of theirs.
Yeah.
It reminded me of two, three seasons ago.
Feel like that as well.
And it also felt like it should have TDK slapped across it. It just felt a bit like that TDK Adidas kit that we had years ago.
So do you like a retro feel? Because this is something that is very, very fashionable. Retro football shirts are loved by many people. Lots of clubs call for their new kits to go back to the old kits. Does it have that sense for you, and does that please you?
Yeah, I mean, that comes around every few years. When you were going around in nappies, now you've revealed your age. You had Man United playing in the original Newton Heath strip for a season, and Aston Villa. They had lace-up ties for the collars. Do you remember when they all came back, James?
Yeah.
And I think we didn't really go into that. We had the Don Rogers kit came back for the centenary year as an away kit. But that was the only nod back. Because I heard rumours that it was going to be claret with very thin blue stripes, a bit like the 1969 kit when we were playing them, but they turned out not to be true.
That's quite a nice. I like that kit, actually, because that kit is, a lot of people buy that as a casual top, don't they? That,
yeah, I've got the Don Rogers one because that's the first one I ever had when I was four, so it's kind of
when you're four.
I had that kit when I was four.
Wow. Did you buy it personally?
I got bought for me by my mum. I'll tell you, it went off. Didn't feel like today's kits.
Is it worth buying the new kit, do you think?
Yeah.
I'm over 50 now. I don't want to be, you know.
If he was going to buy a kit, it stands out.
It does look good, apart from that collar bit.
I like it.
Well, talking of buying things, Crystal Palace chairman Steve Parish is open to new outside investment, but the club are not in talks with controversial former Manchester City owner Thaksin Shinawatra about a £150 million takeover. That's been rumoured left, right and centre. The club are denying it. Is it something you could see happen?
No, I feel like it came out yesterday, the story, and today they're denying it. So I don't feel like there's it's going to happen. We talked about it on our review show podcast yesterday. He's an interesting character. He's had corruption
allegations. He, of course, had his assets frozen whilst in charge of Manchester City.
Yeah, and he seems like a type of man who's overambitious. When I read about him, it seemed like when they won a game, he still wasn't happy. When they lost a game, he wasn't happy. So he was a grumpy guy. But if you look at his net worth, he was worth around $1.9 billion.
This podcast you mentioned, is it available anywhere, DR?
Yeah, it is. It's www.backofthenest.com.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I have to get that in.
If you base this new owner, I mean, he's from Thailand, and they have a Thai owner at Leicester, and look what they've done. And the owners there have significantly invested quite a bit of money, and they've stayed at the club for many years. He's very passionate. I think he was exiled from Thailand.
Yeah, he was. He's living in Dubai now.
And I think his sister's now trying to run the country.
How far had he taken Man City before they were taken over by Qatar?
It was 1 year. He was there, I think, 2017 to. No, 2017.
It was a good while ago. It was the sort of mid-Sven era. if memory serves, where they had the likes of Ilano and Stephen Ireland, and they were quite good. They were sort of an upper mid-table Premier League side, but he didn't oversee that breakthrough into continental qualification.
And also, he was involved in politics around that time, and he's not anymore. But it's not going to
happen. There's no fault of his own that he's been exiled from Thailand, by the way. They had a military coup there, and he was doing a perfectly good job, and he just got basically shafted. I travelled in Thailand for about a year or so, so I read the newspapers, but the people loved him. He actually did a lot of good for the poor people in Thailand. But the military and the royalty, I can't take too much about it, but basically, he got shafted and he had to go.
A complex situation there, of course.
I think if you look at the bigger picture, though, it's the fact that American owners... We heard a rumour a couple of months ago that they want out. I think it's true that now that this rumour is coming up, that I don't know how to pronounce the name. And on the podcast, I called him Mr. Frank, so I'm going to call him Mr. Frank now. It's the fact that Mr. Frank was interested in buying a club. So I feel like it shows that the rumours about American owners leaving a club is true.
Yeah, but the fact that we've had Colonel Gaddafi's son and P. Diddy interested in buying us before.
Is that as a coalition or are they interested in individuals?
Separate occasions. So I'm taking anything with a pinch of salt. I mean, James has shed a lot of light on him. I knew nothing of this. It's almost like you're being sponsored by him.
I'm sure he's not. Imagine that P. Diddy at Selhurst Park. That would be... quite something. Coming up, there are winners, there are losers of every takeover bid. There were winners and losers against Bournemouth at the weekend. We'll be saying which players impressed and which disappointed.
This is Love Sport.
Finally, there were goals at Selhurst Park this weekend. 5 of them for Palace, 3 of them for Bournemouth. That can mean only one thing. Some players did very, very well. Some players... not so well. Now, I was impressed and interested by Patrick Van Aanholt because on the final day of the season, he seemed to be exactly what we have discussed about him all year. Exciting going forward, James, with an eye for goal, and defensively, if not inept, certainly pretty flimsy.
Yeah, I mean, what he did, he proved how effective he is going forward and getting the goal. But he also gave us that opportunity to attack very, very quickly and link up with our forward play, and that's what he can do on his day. You know, he is a very, very good player, and I'm not so dismissive of him. I've always said that we should still retain him, and I think he's high quality. He's an international. He just needs to be managed better by whether it's by his teammates or by his manager. Just on his defensive side of the game, but I felt he had a pretty good game.
Yeah, that's the thing with Patrick. I don't understand it. It's the fact that he wasn't the greatest defender, like even when he was on form, but he wasn't this bad. I still feel like he can be a half-decent defender, but even looking at the game on a weekend, at times he was just so out of position. It's just so confusing. But of course, he got that goal, and I feel like it was the right decision to start him. As I said in previous shows, if you sit a player, you know, certain players can take different reactions from being dropped out. So Patrick Van Aanholt, maybe if you just sat him out for this game as well, he may have overthought it, and you know, it could have affected him in the long term. So it was a good decision to start him. He got the goal as well, but I still see a quality player there. He just needs to improve in the defensive end, and hopefully this summer he'll focus that side of his game and come back stronger.
So we probably need to be just a bit careful what type of games he plays in. So maybe he's not the player we play every week against certain teams, but he is capable and good enough against certain opposition, but maybe not every week.
Is he going to be happy with that, though? That's the thing. Because he is effective going forward. Now, I've said this about McArthur as well, is... if he's getting 5, 6, 7, 8 goals a season, that's not a bad return for a player in his position. And for all his defensive frailties, I don't want to lose him for those 8 goals.
Yeah, I don't want to lose him as well. I just feel like we need to strengthen the left-back position. Now, when he was playing decent, we didn't really look into it as much because we got left-back who's solid. But now he's showing the cracks where... we don't have a left back, and we can't really drop Patrick Van Aanholt, as if we do, I know Joel Ward has played there, but he's not a natural left back, and there's just a massive space there. So we need to strengthen left back position. I don't know if we should look at academy or get someone in.
We've got Schlupp. He can play left back.
He's not. I don't see him as a left back. He came into the club as a left back, but now Roy Hodgson has converted him to more of a midfielder / a winger rather than left back.
Well, maybe he converted the wrong person then.
I think if it wasn't for him being injured, I think he would have definitely slotted in at left back rather than Ward. Because I've seen him play at left back and I've seen him do a pretty good job there.
Yeah. I thought that as well, but then the game against Manchester United, he took off Patrick Van Aanholt, Roy, put Schlupp at left back, and I'm not lying, a couple minutes later, Schlupp out of position, he got lost, and United scored from it.
It wasn't even that, it was almost less than a minute, and there was confusion about positioning, and the transition didn't go as well as it should do. Now, I don't know whose fault that would have been, whether that's the player's fault or the players around him's fault, but yeah, it was shockingly bad, and he did get coated for it. Whether it was all his fault or not, I don't know.
I don't think he came on to actually specifically go in at left back.
He was playing in midfield, exactly. And then he slotted to left. But still, it's just his positional awareness.
It happened very, very quickly. And yeah, I wouldn't like to sort of put the blame on him.
Man United saw that and actually made the most of it.
But even though Schlupp can play left back, I still want another left back just because. If he's going to continue the role he's played this season, he's more of a midfielder and winger. And let's say he doesn't play there, then we need another midfielder or winger to replace Schlupp.
Perhaps Roy needs to dip into the transfer market in the summer for a left back. But you did score 5 goals. Some people did excel. Who were your real winners?
Wilfried Zaha, without a doubt. I think he was involved in every goal, really. And he was just phenomenal. I remember Bournemouth fans that were chanting, "He's going to cry in a minute." And then he went. That was the best moment of the season. A couple of seconds later, he grows up the pitch, annihilates Nathaniel Clyne, and then Lerma, the player who he got a yellow card, you know, he pushed Wilf. Wilf stood up, and then he ran past him, got a lovely assist, and I think it sums up Wilfried Zaha. You just annoy him, and he'll go and do that.
Well, that does it. Sorry, it sums up the best and worst in Wilf. The worst was the moaning, and you just thought, no, don't carry on. You're going to get sent off. Heads dropping, you're thinking, Roy, just get him off. And then the next minute, you just see the best of him. And he rang the length of the pitch, crossed the ball, and it was in. Yeah.
It makes me laugh as well because, like, players don't tend to react to what fans are trying. But with Wilf, he does. Like, he put his hands around his ears and he was like to the Bournemouth fans, "I can't hear you." I know he went and got assists after, but you can see the reaction. You can see that the Bournemouth fans were actually getting to him. And sometimes that's not the greatest thing because other fans of other clubs can look at it and they could continue doing that because they know that they'll get under our best player skins. But I feel like that was a good thing to look at, like Wilfried Zaha actually giving a reaction to the Bournemouth fans.
Was it his last performance in a Palace shirt? He was absolutely brilliant. Do you think it was him stepping up to the plate, saying thank you, saying goodbye?
I don't think so. I mean, I know you ask this every week, Johnny.
I'm winding you up. You're just convinced he's going to leave.
And I've seen his comments on social media and there's nothing that suggests there was no sort of goodbye wave or anything at the end of the game. So, yeah, he'll be there next season.
There were some rumours flying about when he got subbed that was so he could say a proper goodbye.
Oh, no.
Just another winner. We'll stop. We've got all summer to talk about whether Wilf stays or go. Luke Dreyer, I thought, made a very, very, very solid debut. Off the bench, he looked
just
calm.
Just played for like 5 minutes.
No, but he looked calm for that 5 minutes. I watched him closely.
No, I agree with you.
And he had 100% pass rate.
It's easy if you only play 3 in 5. That...
No, but he wasn't flustered by the occasion at all. And who else was it? It was another player that was on the bench but didn't make it. I'll have a look it up. But Sako came on, but there was another... Was it?
Sako came on and fell over. I remember that.
Callum somebody, was it?
He tripped over his own feet.
He was quite funny, actually. He was about to fight Adam Smith, I think, at a certain point as well.
He had a good run down by the corner flag and made a mockery out of one of the Bournemouth players.
Luke Dre, he's been injured this season, really. Yeah. So do you think next season Roy will give him a bit of a chance? Or?
Well, if Kouyaté has to step in and fill Luca's shoes, if they can't sort out that contract, then Dreyer might be in there.
Yeah, that's a big worry with Luca.
Any other particular winners for you, apart from, of course, Michy Batshuayi, who does need a mention?
Obviously, we've talked about him earlier in the show and clinical, and he got his 2 goals, should have probably had a hat-trick. But I thought, actually, Max Meyer had a good game. He was on the ball a lot more, and I think he played some good passes. His vision was good. And I think, as I said before, you know, this is his season where he's just bedding into the Premier League and he's getting used to the football. I think he's going to be a good player for us next season.
Yeah.
And I've got to give a shout out for the Bournemouth goalie. He looks quality for somebody so young.
For someone who conceded five goals, I thought he did an excellent job.
No, but you know what I mean.
And a clean sheet on debut. He's still 19. He was the youngest Premier League debutant for a goalkeeper when he started against Spurs since Joe Hart many years ago. Could be an exciting time to be a Bournemouth fan, an exciting time to be a Palace fan as well, and an exciting time to be listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio, because coming up, Dean Gordon, Palace legend, is on the line.
This is
All of the Time.
All of the Time. Hello and welcome back. They caught you out, Nick. They caught you out. You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and the lads from back of the nest. It's DR Kernaz, James Howard and Nick Gillard. James Gray, the afternoon show, the James Gray Show, I should say, presenter, dancing behind the glass with us. He loves that tune, as do we all. We love the Crystal Palace Fan Show, and as do you, because you're here with us. But we're just going to turn our attentions for a moment to the playoffs in the Championship. We've got a semi-final second leg that's just kicked off. It's Aston Villa away at the Hawthorns against West Brom. Villa, of course, 2-1 up. They were a goal behind in that first leg, equalised through Hourihane's absolutely extraordinary screamer. West Brom, of course, without Dwight Gayle, the star centre-forward for this second leg, after he was dismissed for two yellow cards. Gents, who are we backing?
I'm going with Villa. So, yeah. I don't know about you guys.
Well, I want Villa to go through and go up to obviously spend money on Benteke. So.
Yes. What about you, Nick?
I've got lots of baggy supporting friends. So just for them, I want West Brom to come straight back up. I'd rather they still had Darren Moore as manager, though. But, you know.
I agree with that.
It's going to be tough for them, though, without Gayle, isn't it, tonight?
You've also got to consider what will happen to Abraham and Grealish if West Brom prevail tonight. Will it be silly season in the papers tomorrow?
Well, that's an interesting one, because I was just saying during the break that Tammy Abraham, how many goals is it they put up?
29
goals he scored. That's a fantastic return. And I've seen him play at Bristol City in the Championship, and I know he's played in the Premiership for Swansea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think he would be an absolute ideal target for Palace. And I'm not saying that initially he's going to start the game every week. I think he could well, possibly. But I think he would be the perfect player to get in for Palace.
In a sense, don't you think that Chelsea will want something similar to Batshuayi in terms of Tammy Abraham? At least 15 to 20 million. Well, maybe Batshuayi, they want 20 to 30 million, but it's still going to be a lot of money. I don't feel like Chelsea would let him go for free, because he's had a good season in the Championship. And also there's that risk where with Dwight Gayle, we saw that he's a brilliant Championship player, but can he do it in the Premier League? I'm not saying that Tammy Abraham might not be able to do it in the Premier League, but still, would you pay 15 to 20 million for a player and there's a huge risk like that?
I think there's a bit of a subplot to how Chelsea are going to look at Abraham versus Batshuayi, because, of course, Abraham counts as a homegrown player, right? So if whichever one of them stays, if either of them does, if the one who stays is going to be third-choice striker, Chelsea might go for Abraham over Batshuayi, even if they think Batshuayi is the better player, because Abraham ticks that particular box.
Yeah, but even so, Tammy Abraham, at his age, is not going to want to sit on the bench. So there might be an opportunity where we could take him on loan if Villa don't go up. I just feel like
it's just too similar to Batshuayi. I feel like the situation is too similar. Batshuayi wouldn't want to sit on the bench and he would want to go out. So it really depends on who Chelsea prefer. I feel like the homegrown thing that I didn't think about, that's probably going to increase his value even a bit more, because it is important for clubs like Chelsea. So if we had to, we have to pick between Batshuayi and Tammy Abraham, I'd rather go with Mitro Batshuayi, really.
Can't we go for both of them?
You can, but then that's going to be so much. Even with Batshuayi's loan fee, how much was it? 3 million?
3 million.
And they rejected 8 million from Tottenham for basically a couple of months. And yeah. So Chelsea will probably charge huge amounts of money on loan for a whole season.
So we buy him outright for maybe, what, 15 million?
And how do we...
Tammy Abraham. I would... Right,
I think you're looking at 20. Yeah, possibly right, 20
15
plus.
To 20.
Okay.
But yeah.
For Tammy Abraham, you think he's yeah. worth because about 20,
I think
25?
That if we look at... The
amount of goals he's got.
It's not just that, James, and that's a big factor, but you pay an extraordinary premium at the moment for English players. They're yeah. becoming more and more valuable. It's silly season for English players. He'll be an England international in the next few years. You can add another 5 mil for that. I think we're looking at 20 to 25.
And that's why I'll probably go with Batshuayi, because he's already proven himself. I'd rather pay out my money to Batshuayi than Tammy Abraham.
And he hasn't got that time that he needs to embed in and get to know the squad and...
Well, I guess you can do that throughout. If you're signing him, if you're getting him for a season, whether on loan or if you're buying him permanently, I feel like, yeah, you could, well, you know, go into the squad. But yeah. then again, Batshuayi's used to it as well, used to the squad and used to the system, so it'll take less time.
But we're talking about retaining Batshuayi, so he's already was already part of our team. Now, we were earlier saying, you know, the possibility of Connor Wicker moving on, maybe because he's a bit too injury prone. We've got the possibility of Benteke going.
Understatement.
Right, so there's two players, which Nick, you said earlier, I wouldn't like to let players go without replacing them. So we have to think about who we're going to bring in. We've got Sorloth, who has had his chances, hasn't really cut it.
It's a write-off, Sorloth, I think. Yeah.
So we've got three strikers that arguably we want to let go. We have to get quality players in. We're going to have to start spending some money and get a couple of decent players in.
You can only spend what you have, though. That's
and
the thing.
Americans want out, are they going to want to help invest in players that they might not get?
On the realistic option is, as crazy as it might sound, I could just see us getting Jordan Ayew for $4 million as a replacement. I'm not even joking around. I can just see that happening because of the way that we are right now.
But he doesn't score enough goals.
Yeah, but we're not really in a position to spend huge amounts of money on Batshuayi. And then with Tammy Abraham, let's say we get him on loan, he's still going to be another 5-odd million plus for a whole season.
So you say we haven't got enough money. That's why, obviously, Steve Parrish is in the media saying that he's looking at other finance coming in from abroad. And there's been rumours maybe about the ex-Thai Prime Minister, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So
P. Diddy's son.
P. Diddy,
yeah, P. Diddy. Colonel Gaddafi's yeah. son, who are, I should stress, different people.
So,
or are they?
They
have
are.
You seen them in the same room together?
So basically, the club have recognised what the situation is, that there is a problem. We need to get rid of players, but we need to replace them with quality. We haven't got the money, so we have to raise finance. It's like a business that's going downhill.
Just to move away from Palace ever so slightly and staying with the playoffs, obviously Brighton got rid of Houghton yesterday. I've heard Frank Lampard's name put in the frame from somewhere, whether it's just social media nonsense. But what do you make of Brighton getting rid of Houghton? I know they had a pretty poor run.
I think it's deserved based on their form. It's not with Darren Moore and we're talking about West Brom. I feel like it's a different situation to Houghton because Brighton have just been shocking this second half of the season, really. After they've beat us, how many games have they won? Like one or two? Three?
If that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like it's rightly so. But it is hard in the Premier League as there's so much expectations on you just progressing. And I feel like Brighton, they just want to move on to the next step. But
it is
a huge risk, though, because I can see them going down next season without Houghton. Houghton kept them up, and I can see them going down.
I think the interesting thing about this dismissal is that Brighton fans were less surprised than anybody else.
I think that tells you something.
I spoke to Jeremy Smith, who is a French football expert and a massive Brighton fan, and he said, listen, it looks harsh because they did it the day after the season ended. But in a funny way, if it's a decision you're going to take, then take it as soon as possible. It gives Brighton the time to get in a replacement. It gives Houghton time to find a new job. And the big question is whether he's responsible for the signings, because I've seen this argued both ways. I've seen people say, well, Brighton have got a substandard squad. Houghton can't do any better than he's doing with that. And I've seen people argue the other way. I think perhaps harshly, because they did previously have a head of recruitment, and see people argue, well, yeah, okay, they've got a substandard squad, but they've spent a lot of money. And if Houghton's spending money on players who aren't good enough, it's his fault, it's his problem, and he deserved to be shown the door.
Well, this is what I've been reading. You know, initially I thought, well, that's a strange decision. Why let him go? Because he's done well at, you know, at Newcastle, and they let him go a bit too soon, I felt. But,
Brighton fans are coming on the social media and saying, look, he was given a lot of money and he has spent money. Whether he spent it in the right areas of the... Yeah. Of the
that record signing, Jahan Bash, I know he was the top scorer in the Eredivisie, but he's awful at football.
Yeah. Their squad, like, I'm not saying this because I'm a Brighton... Oh, no, Brighton fan. Because I'm a Palace fan, but when you actually look at their squad ain't... Like, there isn't any players that really stand out for me. Honestly, all the money, Glenn Murray, that's
it. Past
but,
it now.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like, yeah, they've got a bad squad, but it'll be interesting to see who they appoint, because it'll show whether they're happy with staying in the Premier League, if they appoint, I don't know, a Pulis type person, or are they going to go and appoint a Frank Lampard type and try see if they could push on and, you know, push up the table a bit more, fight for a top 10 finish.
You talked about their terrible run. Did you see that table of the last 14 games of the season where Palace came fourth?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it, though.
It really doesn't feel like it.
Because the difference in away form compared to home form is just ridiculous.
But if we'd started the season like that, and we did one year with Pardew, and somebody mentioned Europe, and it all went wrong then, didn't it? The moment
that's
Europe
what always was... happens with Pardew.
Yeah. You know, Roy's actually looking at that. What a good job Roy's done. And I've been thinking, is it time for him to go? But looking at that and the run, I think we should stick with him. And actually, people need to realise what a better job he's done than what we may be seeing at home.
With Roy, is it a question of balance? Because one of the things we're hearing that Houghton might have got the sack for is playing perceived excessively negative football, right? Which, DR, is a criticism you've possibly fairly levelled at Hodgson at a few points. But we saw against Bournemouth at the weekend that Roy does know how to play attacking football and the players can do it. So if we get that same safe pair of hands, but with just a little bit more invention, a little bit more risk-taking, could he not be the perfect boss?
He could, 100%. I said it on a review pod yesterday, how if you actually look at, for instance, Max Meyer, we've wanted him to start at home games. And in a way, it's good that Max Meyer didn't start against Cardiff and started against Bournemouth. And another home game, which he started before Cardiff, was Everton. So it seems like Roy's slightly changing it up. And that's all I want to see. I don't want Roy out for no reason. It's not some fans, they just want Roy out and they're not going to change their way. They're not going to change their thought regardless of what happens. I just want Roy to make changes, and he's slowly making them changes. So, in fact, going into next season, if he continues this trend, then I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a purely hypothetical question now, because I'm interested in where your attitudes on Roy are currently sitting. Mm. Would you rather have Roy or Chris Houghton?
Roy, 100%.
Roy.
Yeah, Roy.
In a way, I'm happy that Houghton's gone, because we've been outmanaged by Brighton in both of the occasions that we played them. This season,
we all know what happened last time a Brighton manager came to Palace.
You're talking about, I'm just checking my facts here, but you're talking about Roy pushing on and being a manager that can take us forward. But you have to remember what he did with Fulham in the UEFA Europe. You know, he got Fulham up the league and got them into the final of the Europa's Cup. He's got the potential to do that with a club like ours,
without a doubt.
We're not much different to Fulham. And I think that he's obviously, in my eyes, I think I was more in favour of keeping Fulham even up to a few weeks ago. Maybe you were not.
Keeping Roy.
Yeah. Sorry. The last two games have convinced me that he's got his stay of execution, which I think you would agree.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd be there for next season.
And of course, the team that's on tonight, West Brom, I mean, he left them to go and play for England. West Brom fans look at Roy like we look at Koppel.
Yeah, they love him.
With that respect and, yeah.
A score update for you from that Championship playoff semi-final, I should say. Nearly getting ahead of myself there for Aston Villa. Aston Villa are 2-1 up from the first leg. The score on the night remains 0-0. West Brom 0, Villa 0 at the Hawthorns. Updates for you throughout the show.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show, where I've just been very flattered to be presented with a glorious birthday card from the good people from Back of the Nest. Very, very kind, gents.
It's not every day you're 15, is it?
Behave. Behave. In just a moment, we will be talking to Dean Gordon, who is, of course, a Palace legend. Interesting to get his take on this current Roy Hodgson situation. DR, even you have been won over, haven't you, by the end of the season?
Yeah, 100%. If he continues making changes when things are not working, then I'm happy. That's all I wanted. That's it.
I'm delighted to say we've got Dean on the line now. Dean Gordon, legendary Crystal Palace player. Good evening, Dean. Thanks ever so much for joining us. What did you make of that performance at the weekend? How did it rank amongst the great Palace ones? Because so exciting going forward and yet so flimsy at the back.
I think it was a classic last game of the season. Both teams haven't got much to play for. So it was always going to be, you didn't know whether they're going to win, draw or lose. So the fact that it was a high scoring game, I think it was a fact of players already on the beach booking their holidays. And it was just one of those games where anything could have happened. So I don't really look much into their performance. The fact they won the game is probably the only bonus you can take out of it.
And have you been impressed by the way that the club have finished the season under Roy Hodgson? I know not every fan has been certain about him throughout the year. Where do you stand? Do you think he's the right man to take the club forward?
Definitely. If you look at what's happened to Brighton in the last couple of days with Chris Hughton, it's been a shock to everybody, the fact that he's been sacked and he's lost his job. They've just managed to stay up, but I think staying in the Premiership is probably a very, very difficult job for any team that's in the bottom half of the table. And I'd see their league position as a plus and not a negative. And I think it's the same that for Crystal Palace. I think they've stayed up comfortably, even though there was a couple of scares throughout the season where they were struggling for form. I think where they've ended up is a great position. Lots of positives. Yes, there's always going to be negatives, but I think Roy has done a fantastic job with their final position. And I don't think you can have too many complaints myself.
You're right, Dean. It's so hard not to be chanting Dino when I heard your voice. it's good. Yeah, we finished 15 points clear of the relegation zone in the end. So why do you think there was that panic? Is that just a Palace thing?
I just think it's most fans in general. I think if you go two or three games with losing or you're not playing very well, people tend to panic. I've spoken on this show quite a few times, especially before Christmas, where they were going through a bad period. A lot of people were panicking, but I was confident that they would always rise away from the relegation zone with what happened the previous season, where they went 10 games without winning the game. Everybody panicked. So the experience is there, where players have been through the trials and tribulations of can't win a game. People are saying they're in relegation trouble. And I was always confident that they would come out of it. There's been so many positives out of the team, with Bissaka coming through the ranks and doing so well. You've got Batshuayi, who came to the club in the second half of the season, who's done very, very well. And I thought that was a fantastic signing. So there's lots of positives. That's what's happened in the past few months. And I think Roy Hodgson is a central part of that.
So, Dean, yeah, thanks. I just wanted to ask your opinion. We obviously finished quite strongly. If we'd have started that strongly, we could have been, you know, possibly pushing for 10th place. But what do you think Roy needs to do over the summer? And what positions do you think we need to look at maybe replacing, or what players do you think we need to bring in and maybe let go?
I think probably we may need another centre-back. I think the striker area is an important area where we struggled in the first half of the season. With Benteke being out injured, we always struggled for goals during the season at vital times, even though we've come through it and we've managed to be safe quite comfortably, like you say, 15 points. I think a striker is a main priority, maybe a central defender. I think the core of the squad straight down the middle has been...
Oh, sounds like we've just... Oh, Dean, he does leave. Still with us,
sorry. He has to be...
Yeah. What did you make of Wardy's performance at centre back, Dean? On, because that's kind of like his fourth or fifth position I've seen him play out for the team.
Oh, I think we've got some signal problems with Dean. We'll try and get him back in just a moment. Dean Gordon there will hopefully be back with us. Crystal Palace legend. Dino, you were almost chanting.
Yes. There. Can I ask DR that question then?
You can.
What do you make of Wardy, centre-back? Happy?
Yeah. I think it was the Watford away game in the Premier League where he had a shocking game at right-back, and I actually suggested that I think in a long-term future, playing Joel Ward at centre-back may be the right thing, because Joel Ward, what he's struggled with the most is stopping crosses coming into the box, and at centre-back, you don't have to deal with that. You just have to head the ball away when he does come into the box. You don't have to stop it coming into... So I feel like in a long-term future, I could see Joel Ward playing that, and he had a decent game on a weekend.
And do you think we'll see Sacco occupying a centre-back position next year? Because I was worried this season. I know he got asked about Champions League, and everybody's going to say they want to play in Champions League if that happens. But I was a bit worried how freely he was chatting with Solskjaer when we played Man United at home, and was taking selfies with Pogba, and just, I know they're pally-pally out of matches anyway, but it just seemed he was there for rather too long, and am I reading too much into it, or
maybe, yeah.
Well, we've got Dean Gordon back on the line. Dean, thanks for joining us again. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this. As a player, obviously you're going to have mates in football outside of the current club you're playing for. How likely are you to be influenced into moving to a club because you've got familiar faces there, friends who you know already?
That's a tough one. I think throughout your career, especially coming from the youth ranks, you grow up with a lot of players who end up leaving the club, end up playing for other clubs. There's always friends in football where, you know, you can have mates in every club, but I don't think it will influence me making a move to another particular club unless it was, I'd say, a club maybe in a higher position, fighting for Champions League. I think there's always the point of players wanting to play higher at a bigger club or playing in the Europa League, Champions League. I think that's always a pull. It's never really happened to me. It might happen to other players. But if I'm happy at the current club, I probably would be content to stay where I was. I don't think anyone could influence my decision to leave unless, like I said, it was a club in Europe or something like that.
So as a player, it's quite important that if you're settled and you're playing well, that it is a bit of a gamble, isn't it? You're saying for a player to go to another club and start their career again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is a gamble because sometimes the grass isn't always greener. And so, if you're playing in a team, playing in the Premier League and you're winning and you're comfortable and you're happy where you're living, I think it's probably best to stay where you are unless the offer you're getting is significantly more than what you are getting. Then sometimes that can be the tipping point where you think, maybe it is time for a move.
Right, Dean, one last question for you. Football season's over. What are we going to do with ourselves, mate? Have you got any tips?
You know what? I was thinking the exact same thing today without what happened in the last couple of weeks of the season with, you know, Liverpool doing so well and Spurs winning at Ajax. You've still got the Champions League and the Europa League to come. But, you know, in the off-season, I'm lost for words, mate. I don't know what to do with myself. I'm always looking forward to pre-season. It's just lucky that I think it's probably four, 6 weeks before pre-season starts.
It's a short gap this year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very short gap. And you've got some England games, but it's never the same without the Premier League. Even when there's a break for international breaks and things like that, I never like international breaks. I like to see what's coming up with the Premier League, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do with myself personally.
Dean, the football will be back before you know it. Thanks very much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. Dean Gordon there, Palace legend. Nick, of course, is still completely starstruck. And coming up, it's time for a bit of a chat with you.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and the guys from Back of the Nest. Just a quick update for you from the ODI. England requires 74 runs off 13 overs against Pakistan for the win. They're currently 285 for three, chasing a total of 359. But now to more important matters, it's time for your four-word reviews.
Oh, David Bray will kick us off with "Let's hear some positivity." So let's okay. At Radimus Prime, Wolves' last Palace game. That's not positive, mate. Come on, Dave Wimborne. Wolves Zaha on fire. SF Jerry has said, "Are we at Selhurst?"
Very good.
Yes, Alf CPFC has some advice for Bournemouth. Don't boo Wilfried Zaha. Mr. Cadbury's Parrot, it's a winning kit. Warren Dawkin, goals and Son, amazing. Great team performance today, says Mark Drew. Jenny Sanders says, where has this Palace been? And last one to Mike Deacon, keep Wilf, sign Mitchie.
Now, we've done a lot on this, so I'm not going to labour the point, but is that possible that both of those things happen? You keep Wilf and you sign Batshuayi?
Well, I'm hopeful of keeping Wilf regardless of signing Batshuayi, and I feel like it is possible, but it's going to be hard getting Batshuayi.
Well, you say that, but when you listen to an ex-player like Dean that's just come on and say that it's really important for a player to feel comfortable at a club, and if they're scoring goals, they fit in well, it's a bit of a gamble for them to go elsewhere.
It's just the fact that he's under contract at Chelsea, and Chelsea still have a final say on how much they want to sell him for, if they do want to sell him.
That is a massive goal. Sorry, Dior. Absolutely huge goal in the Championship playoff. It is the ancient veteran centre half. It is Dawson who's got the goal, and what a goal it is. And we can see Dwight Gayle, who of course has got a 2-match ban for that red card in the first leg. He'll miss the final at Wembley should West Brom play in it. It's come from a long throw. I love a long throw. And it's the big centre half. He rises highest, nods it, flicks it back across the keeper, goes in off the post, and it's a wonderful, wonderful goal for West Brom.
Defender should have had that.
Tammy Abraham, that, by the way, misses the clearance.
he tries to do a scorpion kick clearance.
Yeah. Wow. See? We're talking about
we're
him.
Not signing him for as a defender, though. Yeah. What's he doing there?
But, Dawson, not my favourite player. Not the favourite player of Palace.
Yeah, he's the one that elbowed Jules, isn't it?
Yeah. Really crocked him. Oh. Really crocked him. But, yeah, well done. Well done to the... To the
well
to
done,
the
but
prom.
We don't like you, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Goal updates for you throughout that game. Touching on the rest of those four-word reviews, do you think it is time for positivity? Because one thing that we've seen with Palace all season, of course, is that the home form has been terrible. Mm. Now, this is bizarre for a club who are notorious for having superb home support. Do you think that the home crowd could be more supportive of the team? Do you think that might help them kick on at Selhurst?
Well, we've always demonstrated at Selhurst that we have got really good support. And I think, you know, even when we weren't playing particularly well at earlier parts of the season, the support was still there. But it has seemed to have wavered a bit over recent weeks, and it's quietened down. But definitely on Sunday, it was rocking, wasn't it? Like the old days. It was so loud. It was fantastic. So it's just there. It's like this little ebbing away and waiting for this home performance to sort of get everyone off their seats.
I think next season, what's going to be important is that blocky, the singing section. I think that could play a massive role. We'll see how that works out. But the atmosphere this season at Selhurst, even with the HF coming back, I know they improved the atmosphere, but it's still not where it was.
We said that when we first went up, though, and we talked about teams like Stoke, where they started out really well, and you've got a lot of new supporters coming in and lots more tourists.
It frustrates me every home game, though. I say in Arthur is not there are, you know, people do start chants, but it still could be better. But the main stand, from I can't, of course, I'm not there, but it looks like no one in the main
there
stand
are. Like, more and more people joining in the main stand, especially in the family block.
So are we expecting an improvement all the way next season in terms of atmosphere?
I think, yeah, it goes in tandem with the effort that's, you know, I'm not saying that we have to win every home game. I think that we have to look as if we're trying. And I think we've all touched on this, that we've been a little bit too negative at the home games of recent. And that's really frustrated a lot of fans. And, you know, nobody really likes negativity. And it's, you just feel like, oh, what am I doing here? I could have been doing something else. It's just a boring 0-0 or it's another loss at home. And I think that, you know, over the weeks, we've just lost that sort of noise and exuberance from the fans to really get off their feet and sort of give, because they're feeling the team isn't giving the effort, maybe, and they're thinking, well, why should we, you know?
Does that matter? How closely aligned are they? If the team are playing badly, the crowd aren't going to be as up for singing.
Yeah, but even earlier on in the first couple of games at home at Selhurst, I remember playing Liverpool. I think it was a Monday night game.
Yeah, it was very poor.
It was really poor. Monday night games where atmosphere is meant to be the best, but it was still poor. I think, yes, as the season has gone on, the atmosphere, the results has affected the atmosphere, and how we're playing at home hasn't been good, of course. But I feel like as fans, we still need to do a bit better.
Well,
I'm not saying, oh, I'm the best and no one else is chance. I'm just saying as a fan base, tell us... We've seen better days. And
well,
we missed the
fanatics weren't there at the beginning of the season, right? So that's one reason. They're the ones that kickstart it. And then we've got the second half of the season where we haven't been playing particularly well. So that's two reasons why it's been a bit quiet. But I think next season is going to be key because they are moving more central. And if everyone else gets behind them, it could be back to how it was.
I think the idea of the singing section is to spread it out, really. So it's blocky and then, others join in as well. But I feel like something else needs to happen in other stands as well, such as maybe the main stand and the alpha. I'm not saying a singing section, but something where we have a small group where we could encourage the fans.
It's difficult because, as we've seen with the people that have been moved... Yeah. Out of Blocky in the Homesdale, they've been there years. They didn't want to be that vocal, and a lot of the main stand is, although we've got the family section in there at each end, a lot of the fans are older, and yeah, they do join in a bit, but they just no offence, and I'm getting the same way myself, but we just haven't got it in us to be like that.
We're
all
getting on
the
a bit,
game,
aren't we?
Yeah,
and we just want to sit down rather than stand up because our knees hurt.
I got a leaflet through my door, over 50 for seniors. I'm just, you know, you being 15.
I'm older than 15, all right? And I've had this coming up. It's time for your listener questions.
This is Love Sport.
The Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's time for your questions. Just a quick update from that Championship semi-final playoff leg 2 between West Brom and Villa. West Brom are 1-0 up on the night at home at the Hawthorns. It's 2-2. Remember that away goals do not count in Championship playoffs. So as things stand, we're going to extra time and then we're going to the lottery of penalties. DR. Some questions.
Yeah, we'll start with a light question. It's from Simply Will. He says, away kit and summer tour, get it sorted. I don't know. What's your ideas of summer tour?
Are we being put in charge of
it? Yeah, exactly. We're put in charge. Right,
imagine if me and you design the away kit.
No. Imagine we planned a summer tour as well. Where would we go?
Well, I'd have a yellow kit with a sash.
I'm going with black
kit.
I'm going black kit. I'm going black kit with... You know, red. I remember the away kit that we had a couple of seasons ago in the Premier League, where it was a black kit with red and blue. That was kind of decent, but you could modify that.
I'm going for the old Brazilian kit we had, the yellow and green shorts. That was brilliant.
Oh, that could work out as well. Okay, yeah. What about summer tour?
Summer tour. Well, you said that Roy doesn't like going. I remember we recorded a Christmas thing in the middle of November. We had
Cornwall.
To do it, didn't we? And you said Roy go to Cornwall for his holidays.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly glamorous, is it?
Roy. What about Palace?
Yeah, well, Roy's got to go with him, hasn't he?
Yeah, but not everyone wants to go Cornwall.
You'd want to go somewhere where you're going to play decent-ish teams, but you're also going to...
I want us to
try
go
and pick up more fans while we're there.
I want us to go to America because I feel like this season I'm going to go follow Palace on pre-season. So I want to go to America. I think that would be like good. I don't know about you lot.
Yeah.
I think we went to America, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we did. We went to FC Cincinnati. Something like that.
And
that
Philadelphia.
Was decent.
Too much travelling involved in America. I'd like to go somewhere where you can just get to see all the games, not travel too far.
Oh, yeah, I guess
not
so.
Not too far.
Dorset.
Yeah. Dorset?
Yeah.
Seriously?
That's quite easy, isn't it? You're far enough away from home.
Oh, wow.
You've
all
got
right.
Bournemouth, you've got Southampton. No. Oh.
Well, we already played them twice a season.
Did you think Dorset was a country, DR?
No.
Oh, good. That wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, wherever we go, it won't be as far as Chelsea and Arsenal are going, will it?
Possibly not. Next question.
Stephen Sheffield, he asks, what would be a good summer window? So there's different ways we could look at it. So who would we want to keep? Who would we want to sell? I don't know about you guys, but I think, first of all, who we want to keep? Zaha. And if we keep Zaha, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I feel like that's good in that part of the window.
Yeah. I'd say get Luka to sign a new contract.
Yeah, that would be massive as well.
Try and get Batshuayi. And if we can get some decent money for Benteke, I think that would be worth letting him go and using money to buy.
So selling Benteke, that would be...
I would be on my priority if we can get... Someone comes in with what I would say ridiculous money for him, yeah, let him go.
But not until we've got somebody to replace him with. That's got to
be a definite. Well, he said Batshuayi. So yeah, you've got Batshuayi to replace him. I'll be if that was a scenario, then yeah, I'll be happy.
I'd like Butland in, Hennessy out, and I'd like to see the.
But do you think he would be
the Brazilian chap who's playing for the under-23s? Lucas Perry, maybe see him in the goalkeeper's position.
But do you think
Dreyer again? It might be like a new player. So we got James Daly, who's been doing quite well up front for the youth teams. So we might look from within, because remember, we haven't got a lot of money.
Yeah. Do you think Jack Butland will be happy to sit on the bench, really? Because Gaeta is our first choice goalkeeper.
If Butland comes to Palace, he's coming to Palace to play football.
Yeah, but
surely.
he can't. I see Gaeta as a better goalkeeper.
I can't see it. I think we just have to keep Henderson
also,
if he's happy. To
yeah,
stay.
And also, yeah. Let's say, all right, then Butland starts. Is Vicente going to be happy to be dropped for Jack Butland as well? I don't see Jack Butland happening if Vicente Gaeta stays with us. But I feel like keep Wilfried Zaha and Aaron Wan-Bissaka as well, and also getting Michy Batshuayi. I think that would be a good summer window.
We need to look at a left back.
Yeah, and a left back. I'm not too sure who, but we need to strengthen.
We need to keep. I think we need to keep PVA, but he needs competition, obviously. Yeah.
I think realistically that would be a good summer window. It could happen, but it'll be hard. So next one is from Mark Wenner. Keep Roy for final term of his contract and expect similar table finish, or look elsewhere to try and push for top half or maybe last European spot.
We've got the best points total in the Premier League era. We've finished third in the league before. I mean, you weren't born then, DR, I don't think.
What year?
1991. Yeah, yes. As soon as I said 19, were you born then?
Not a breath.
He was only
I'm only 15. Remember?
Oh yeah, sorry, yeah, exactly. Forgot about that. It's the spots that gave it away.
Oh wow.
We've improved season on season, haven't we?
Mm.
I know people. I've been castigated for this, for coming out. I got castigated on a new forum. palacecomrades.com. I said I'd mention them. I've done it there. Somebody called me out for saying, oh, stop going on about Kerbishley leaving Charlton, because that's just one instance of one manager leaving a club and it's gone really, really bad for them. But who do you have? That's the thing. My only worry is it's 1 year. It's been spoken about before. Maybe get somebody in to be under his wing, as well as having Lenny Lawrence there. And have a smooth changeover. I mean, Liverpool used to get their managers from the boot room all the time, didn't they? What's happened to that?
It can work. Coming up, we'll have some more of your questions.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to Johnny Burrow, DR Kernaz, James Howard, and of course Nick Gillard of the Back of the Nest for your Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio. Quick update for you in the Championship playoff semi-final second leg between West Brom and Villa at the Hawthorns. West Brom 1-0 up on the night. It's 2-2 on aggregate. And just a reminder for you that away goals do not count in this kind of fixture in the Championship. So as things stand, we are set for extra time. We're set for penalties. We'll be with you every step of the way here on Love Sport Radio. And DR, for now, we've got one more listener question.
Yes, we've got one from Pete. He asks, should we all take a moment to acknowledge how much our boy Andros has contributed to this season's campaign? That goal aside and the others, he's been the heart of the team and he has been inspiring the fans and he's my player of the season.
Yeah, good shout. He's been fantastic.
What do you guys think of Andrew Townsend?
Yeah, absolutely. He's had a really good season. I think he did score a few more goals the previous season, didn't he? But
I feel like he was a bit knackered coming towards the end of the season, really. He's played a massive amount of minutes. Yeah. And credit when credit is due, he's delivered really this season. Of course, he would have wanted more goals. But there's only so much you can do. It's more of a physical thing with him, I think. Next season, we just have to be better at limiting his minutes so we can get the best out of him. I feel like he's just run out of gas coming towards the end of the season, and he still scored, you know, that brilliant goal against Cardiff last week. So he's a good player for us, and he's very underrated at times.
Yeah, I think in the past he's been accused of sort of drifting in and drifting out of games, but you know, I seem to see him all action these days.
What I found weird was that this weekend's game, I don't feel like he had a particularly good game. I don't know about you guys, but he scored that goal, but there were so many times where he just passed the ball away. Yeah, he just seemed like he wasn't at it. But then again, he still managed to score a goal, and it really sums up Townsend. He just, even though he has a bad game, he can still have them moments, and he's contributed to the team massively this season in cup games as well, not in the Premier League, and that's why he's probably run out of field towards the end.
An interesting one. I want to touch on Wilfried Zaha a bit further because I'm very interested by what Eddie Howe had to say in his post-match press conference after the game. He said, "We didn't deal very well with Zaha at all. We've maybe not had a better individual opponent this season. He was very difficult to contain." High praise indeed. Let's bear in mind that Bournemouth have played, well, it's the end of the season. They've played everyone. They've faced Aguero, Sterling, Salah, Mane, Eden Hazard. He's saying that for him, on the day, Zaha perhaps pipped all of those. How do you think he ranks amongst the very most elite players currently playing in England?
He's up there with the best players in England, skill-wise. Pass possibly doesn't finish, score enough goals.
He's getting better at that, though.
Yeah, I feel like once he starts scoring more goals, how do you separate him?
He'd be the finished article, wouldn't he? Yeah, he'd be the £100 million player if he could score goals as well.
It's the attitude a little bit that worries me about him.
Do you think he's got an attitude problem, Nick?
He's maturing, though.
Passionate.
Right, and reading between the lines, what does that mean?
Well, it shows that he wants the best for the club, I think, and for himself. And it shows a real desire, and you want that heart, and it's tempering it without tempering his play. And the goal that Townsend got, his run, was how he should do that, is take it out on the opposition through playing rather than taking it out on the opposition or slow clapping the ref. He's learning so much every season, I think. But you've got to think, Is he yet at his peak? How old is he? 26? 27? 27. Yeah. So he's got to be getting to that point where he's going to be at his peak. And controversial, you've also got to look, well, if we are going to offload him, is this the best time when he's near his peak so we can get the most cash for him?
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't quite put him up there with Hazard just yet, but he has the potential to be better.
He has the potential to be better than Eden Hazard.
Quite possibly, yes.
No, I don't.
Do you guys buy that?
I don't see that happening. I feel like 20, he's a very good player, but Eden Hazard is a different class. Like, I'm not disregarding Wilf's talent, but Eden Hazard, there's a reason why he's wanted by, like, Real Madrid for around £100 million. Wilf is wanted by lots of big clubs, like Man City and
Bayern Munich.
Bayern Munich, and yeah, there's some very good teams. But being wanted by Real Madrid at that price as well, where they're willing to pay £100 million, it just shows the class between them two. But I feel like Eden Hazard is just on his own level.
But then again, if Wilf is playing in a team that's below mid-table in the Premiership, if he played in a team such as, I don't know, Chelsea, Man United, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, whoever, he's going to look much better because he's going to have better players surrounding him.
Yeah.
And they're going to make him look better. I think he can step up.
I still feel like his just finish is not up there to be with the likes of Eden Hazard. Eden Hazard, he's still a good finisher. Mm. I feel like Wilfried Zaha, he's had opportunities this season, like, and he just missed them. And what was it? Oh, it was. I think, I don't know if it was a Cardiff game where he missed, I know he scored that goal, but he missed an opportunity before that. But he has missed some clear opportunities. And I feel like once he starts scoring them, then yes, he will push on to the next level. But yeah, I don't think he will go past Eden Hazard, really.
I had another reason for bringing up those Eddie Howe comments. Because, of course, the Bournemouth manager there is giving Zaha about as much praise as it's possible to give a modern footballer. And that's in stark contrast to what Howe had to say about Zaha back in 2017, when he appeared to question his integrity, accusing him of diving after that 2-2 draw. Now, we saw an instance in this game against Bournemouth, and I'm talking about Wilf's run for Batshuayi's second goal, where if a player were a diver, dive he would have gone, because
yeah,
the first dive you would have gone, what am I doing? The first challenge, I thought, I'm going to style that out, and then
Perks
my producer
will be 16.
Just growled at me. The first challenge is horrible. If he catches him properly with that first challenge, it's a potential leg breaker. Wilf gets clipped, hurdles it, carries on. The second challenge isn't a challenge at all. It's a two-handed shove. Again, if he throws himself to the ground, free kick to Palace in a broadly dangerous area, yellow card for the opposition, and on we go. He perseveres through both of those, shows absolutely no interest at all in going down, and sets up a goal at the end of it. Do you think we're still going to see Wilfried Zaha labelled a diver next season?
We say it every show. On Twitter, people say Wilf's a diver. We say, show us the evidence. Nobody ever has. Even the time that he got booked for diving, it turned out he didn't dive.
Whatever happens, he's always going to be labelled as a diver. That's his label now. It's just unfortunate. But when you think of when other fans mention Wilfried Zaha, even when I talk with my mates, they say, all right, cool, he dives. And I say, show me the evidence, as Nick has said, but they don't. But I feel like that's just his label now. And it's not something easy to get dusted away with. I feel like that's Wilfried Zaha now. He's going to be known as a diver when he doesn't dive. But I feel like when you look at that particular challenge by Lerma where he pushed him directly, I feel like the adrenaline just got to Wilf, and that's why he didn't drop. Normally, let's say it was another day and he didn't have that instance with the Bournemouth fans right before it, I feel like he could have easily went down, but he was just so in a groove that he was a different guy.
It reminded me of one of those computer games where you've got somebody and then you just suddenly hit the boost button.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It just went into fast, powerful mode and no one could touch him. It was absolutely fabulous to watch.
How much of the gonna cry in a minute chant do you think spurred him on for that run?
And how much of that is about that passion, that fight that you were mentioning, Nick? That desire perhaps to wind people up, and if not wind them up, then certainly prove them wrong.
100%.
Yeah, dear.
100%. I think that Bournemouth fan saying that, you could see it by his reactions. He reacted. He said, I can't hear you. And then after that, 20 seconds later, he goes down the line and just destroys Bournemouth. As I said, I feel like the adrenaline, he can convert that. This is what I want with Zaha. I don't want him to show his frustration to away fans chanting, because other fans are going to look at it and they're going to say, all right, it works. But what I want him to do is what he done with that run. He just take that, they're saying that, use that as a motivation and just destroy their team, which he did do. And yeah, that's what he should continue doing from next season as well. I just want to see more of him taking advantage.
It's not the first time we've seen him do that.
Yeah,
he's done it
with Watford. He's done it Watford at home. Absolutely. I remember where they were calling him a cheat and then he went on to score. Yeah. West Ham at home where they said that you're not too good for England, and then he went to score and beat them. So he has done that, but I just don't want him to show his reaction out loud.
I'll always remember the time when we played West Ham at the bowling ground, Upton Park, and we were singing, he's just too good for you. And then the West Ham fans sang back, "He's just too good for you." And I thought, yeah, fair enough.
But you're still sure he's sticking around. Oh. And James, I am going to keep asking.
But yeah, Bournemouth fans, they were chanting that as well. They were saying he's leaving you in the summer. I don't know if you guys heard that, but that's what they were chanting.
Yeah, right.
That.
David Brooks, Callum Fraser, Callum Wilson, Ryan Fraser, I should say, all out the door at Bournemouth as well, by that logic. You know, exactly. I think it's important that we don't reach a point in modern football where every time a club outside the top six has a special player, or even a very good player, they cut and run. Because it's exciting to see Zaha at Palace, to see Fraser at Bournemouth. It's what it should be about.
He's a proper street kid, you know, who was raised up in the streets around Selhurst Park. You know, he's come from a family that's local. He's gone away. He's come back home. He loves it at Palace. And, you know, you can see the passion when he plays. And, yeah, we do have to accept that he's got this personality that maybe gets him into trouble. But there is the other side of the coin which helps his game. So, yeah, I'm hoping he stays.
He's a Palace man, and Wilf will be a Palace boy next season if the lads get their way. Join us next week on the Palace Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.